Dr. Weiser, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
What questions did you and the rest of the research team set out to answer?
The main study question for this paper was whether food insufficiency, which simply means that people said they did not have enough food to eat, was associated with risky sexual practices. And we also wanted to understand whether the relationship between food insufficiency and risky sex was different for men and women. Now, the idea to focus on this topic really came out of some of our preliminary qualitative work in Botswana and Swaziland. And during interviews there, female participants continued to tell us that food insufficiency was really a central issue for them and that it contributed to risky sex.
What kinds of things did you hear from them? What did they say to you?
So very interesting examples, like one woman, you know, in one of the early interviews just said to me, "Let me tell you something. We're having sex because we're hungry. If you gave us food, we would not need to have sex in order to eat." Another woman told me that even though she understands that she may die from HIV/AIDS by having sex, she said, "You know, I'm going to die from hunger tomorrow, whereas I would die from HIV/AIDS 5 to 10 years later. So I'm going to choose to live now."
And so the survey involved a group of people in Swaziland and in Botswana. And what were the specific kinds of links that you were trying to understand or establish?
So we were trying to establish whether food insufficiency was associated with a number of risky sexual behaviors. And the risky sexual behaviors that we looked at were unprotected sex, sex exchange, intergenerational sexual relations, which just meant that there was at least a 10-year age difference with their sexual partners, and lacking control in their sexual relations. And we wanted to also understand, you know, whether these relationships held were different for men and women and whether they held in both countries.
And by sex exchange, you mean, in this case, food for sex?
Yeah, so for women, we meant exchanging sex for food or other resources, and for men, this meant paying for sex using food or other resources.
And so what links did you establish, and what differences, and I know they were great, between men and women?
So the key result was that lack of food was strongly and significantly associated with all of the risky sexual behaviors that we looked at among women. For example, women who did not have enough to eat were 70% more likely than women who did to engage in unprotected sex, and were also more than 80% more likely to engage in sex exchange. Also, they were more likely to report intergenerational sex and to say that they didn't have control in their sexual relations. The relationships between lack of sufficient food and risky sex were much weaker among men. Men who reported food insufficiency had only 10% higher odds of reporting unprotected sex, and there were no associations between food insufficiency and the other risky sexual practices that we looked at for men.
And then when you add in factors such as, in this case, a woman's education, her socioeconomic status, what happens to that linkage between in some cases, not quite starvation, I guess, but a lack of food and sexual practices?
Yeah, so, you know, we did really want to look at the relationship between food insecurity and risky sex when controlling for factors like income and education to get a little bit at whether this relationship that we found was mediated by socioeconomic status. And what we found was that even when comparing people of the same education and income levels, people who did not have enough to eat were more likely to engage in risky sex. Overall, what we're talking about here is people who had to make impossible choices. They had to make trade-offs, for instance, as I said before, between dying now from starvation and potentially dying later from HIV. And income and education just don't adequately capture those complexities.
And again, does this apply largely to women rather than men?
Yeah, largely to women. And you know, there's some explanations for why income and education did not account for the findings. Because when we think about people living in Botswana and Swaziland and elsewhere, being food insecure is undoubtedly influenced by income, poverty and food insecurity are not exactly the same thing. You know, as you might imagine, there are many poor people who can grow food on their own, so even though they're poor, they have enough to eat. And there also may be other families that have resources and income, but income is not distributed equally among family members. So, for example, women or people who are sick or who have HIV may be fed less or in some cases not fed at all. So in these cases, even though the family has resources, individuals within the family may be food insecure.
One thing we haven't touched on yet is we talk about the gap between men and women in these two countries. What's the cultural overlay here, the status of women in society?
Yeah, so I think that because there are such significant power differentials between men and women in many parts of these societies, I think that does largely account for some of the discrepancies between men and women. And I think that the pathways for how lack of food can lead to risky sex may look quite differently for men and women. You know, as I've said, women's vulnerability may come from these power differentials in their relationships and also the fact that they don't have control over resources. And that can often lead to sex exchange, intergenerational sex, and a lack of an ability to insist on condom use, as our findings showed. Now, for men, I think that food insecurity can work in a different way, and that food insecurity can threaten their livelihoods and lead to migration to find work. And then migration and mobility have in turn been shown to be associated with risky sexual practices in many different settings. And a final issue to capture some of the differences between men and women is that women are often more food insecure than men, and malnutrition is thought to make people more susceptible to HIV when exposed. So in that sense, women, in addition to all of the other issues, would also possibly be at higher risk when exposed to someone with HIV.
Sherry, is what you found in this study in Africa then, can you make any generalizations about how this may play out in other regions of the world?
Yeah, I mean, I think that these issues certainly may be most salient in Africa, since Africa has both the highest prevalence of HIV and the highest prevalence of undernourished individuals. That being said, I do think these issues certainly have resonance across the world. And we're talking about pretty much anywhere where women are dependent on men for food and resources and where women lack power in society and within their relationships. We're even seeing some similar patterns in some very preliminary work that we're doing among homeless and marginally housed individuals in the U.S. And I think in Africa and elsewhere, what we're talking about is a vicious cycle where lack of food contributes to the spread of HIV, and then HIV/AIDS, in turn, worsens food insecurity when you have so many productive members of society dying due to HIV and AIDS.
And so what do you want those who are involved in developing strategies for fighting HIV/AIDS to take from this?
I think the key point and one of the take-home messages is that we really need to consider alleviation of hunger as central to the fight against AIDS. I think our study provides some direct evidence for what many people have been saying for a long time, namely that HIV/AIDS and food insecurity are directly linked, and you cannot address one without addressing the other. In the West, we've had a tendency to target HIV prevention efforts on the individual with the thought that if only we provided people with the knowledge and education that they need, people's attitudes and behaviors would change, and that in turn will lead to HIV prevention. I think more recently there's been a focus on changing some of the underlying structures and circumstances that contribute to these behaviors in the first place. And I think our findings really fit into this way of thinking and suggest that we need to start tackling some of these root problems in order to change the direction of the epidemic. One key strategy is that organizations that provide sustainable hunger relief need to be partnering with the HIV/AIDS organizations so that both groups can use their resources most effectively. We also need to vastly scale up our efforts and funding towards hunger alleviation in general, and this will involve understanding the causes of food insecurity in each context. And finally, we're also ultimately talking about addressing some of the underpinnings of gender discriminatory attitudes and laws in sub-Saharan Africa and elsewhere. I think our study is highlighting here the fact that access to food is one of the human rights that needs to be one of the essential elements in the global response to HIV/AIDS.
Okay. Dr. Sherry Weiser of the University of California, San Francisco, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.